Going Linux, episode 159, Computer America, number 45. Welcome to the Going Linux podcast. I'm your host, Larry Bushy.
And I'm your co-host, Tom. Whether you're new to Linux, moving from Windows to Linux, or just thinking about upgrading to Linux, this podcast will provide you with valuable information and advice that will help you in Going Linux.
We hope that you'll find this and all of our episodes helpful in learning about Linux and its applications and using them to get things done.
In today's episode, Computer America.
You're listening to Computer America.
Hello and welcome into the Computer America show. It's the nation's longest running, nationally syndicated radio talk show on computers. It's Tuesday, the 20th December, 2011. And I'm your host, Craig Crossman.
And I'm your Lucent co-host, Ben.
Yes, you are Lucent.
Shining?
Shining, yes, exactly. Clear.
No, that's translucent.
You're loosened. Well, anyway, of course, it's Tuesday night, and that means it's our all Linux show. All right. Well, of course, as I said, it's the third Tuesday of the month, and that is significant in the fact that every third Tuesday of the month, we devote the subject to the Linux operating system. It's because it's extremely popular. It's an important operating system. So we devote the entire show to the subject of Linux in order to answer questions like, you know, is Linux right for me? And, you know, if you have a Linux question, tonight's the night for you to give us a call. Joining us is our Linux expert, Larry Bushy. Now, Larry is the creator and the host of the Going Linux podcast. Larry, welcome into Computer America. How are you doing, guy?
Thanks very much. I'm doing great. It's almost the end of the year and thinking about giving away gifts, as you mentioned. So, yeah, getting ready for Christmas.
Giving away.
Can I say Christmas on the air?
Of course.
Is that going to offend anyone?
No.
Christmas is a real event. I've been meaning to tell people.
If you're more comfortable, you could say Xmas, but you could say Christmas. You could say Christmas, Hanukkah. Kwanzaa, yes. all the, you know.
Chris Mahana Kwanzaa.
Yeah, Chris Mahana Kwanzaa.
That's it.
Mm-hmm.
That's
exactly.
It.
Okay. Yeah, whatever.
We'll go
you,
with that.
You know, we're not that politically correct, you know. We're somewhat, but not, you know, not to the point of just being silly. So, although, yeah, we like being silly and ridiculous, but not in that
way. Not that way.
No, exactly.
What are some unique Linux gifts?
Well, you can give away lots of Linux gifts, and many of them don't cost you very much, like Linux CDs and, you know, stuffed penguins. Maybe go to the store, grab a penguin, the penguin being the mascot of the Linux operating system.
Uh-huh. Well, there you go. So, they have, like, plushy little toys, you know?
Penguins. Sure. They got all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
I got three of them sitting here in my office.
Really? Have you named them yet?
No, I have not gone that far.
Okay, well, you should name one of them Ben. I think that's
Mint, Ubuntu,
and Fedora. Yeah,
exactly.
Exactly. Now, tonight the topic at hand is going to be Synergy. This is an application. Something. It's a cross-platform keyboard and mouse sharing app. Or application for the Linux operating system, and we're going to be talking about that. And right out of the gate, Larry, we have a caller. His name is Charlie. He's listening to us in Park Ridge, Illinois. He's got a question for you. Computer America, Craig Crossman. Hi, Charlie. How are you?
Hi, guys. Hi, Larry, Craig, and
Hi,
Ben.
Hi, Charlie.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call.
Our pleasure. What can we do for you?
Well, I talked to you quite a few months ago. Uh-huh. Larry sent me a couple discs. Ubuntu 9.10 and Mint 8.
That was quite a while ago.
Yeah, that was quite a while ago. And I bought a new computer with two internal hard drives on there, one running Windows 7 and the other one running Ubuntu and Mint. Well, anyway, I couldn't get on the Internet. So I gave you guys a call. The second call I called you on, and Larry gave me a link to go to, and I'm a senior citizen, and I follow up once in a while. So I lost it somehow. And I contacted Larry, and he helped me out and sent me a link. And I tried different things, and I gave up on it, and I just quit. Well, then all of a sudden, I got a bright idea. I said to myself, you know what? I'm going to try to reinstall those disks. So I put Ubuntu on, I worked off the disk, and I was able to get on the internet, working from the disk, not from the hard drive. So I took that out, I put Mint in, I did the same thing, it was fine. So what I did is, I reinstalled both of the versions on the computer, didn't use a disk, went into the internet from the my hard drive. Mm-hmm. I can get on the internet with both Mint and with Ubuntu now.
Oh, that's great.
Now,
success story, a bit of a mystery as to why it didn't work in the first place.
Well, you know what somebody mentioned to me? Somebody else mentioned to me, apparently you didn't get a clean installation the first time.
Oh, that could be.
That could be it. Yeah.
But, like I say, I could, when I was running it off of the CDs at the first time, the very beginning, I could get on the internet. But then I installed it on my computer, try to get on the internet directly from the computer, I couldn't get on the internet. But when I reinstalled it, I'm able to get on the internet. So I promise you guys, I know I'm a little late on it, but a promise is a promise. Craig says when you come up with an answer or you find out something, give us a call. So I just hope, you know, somebody else can hear this or whatever it is, but I'm tickled pink about it.
Yeah, and I'm tickled pink that you took the time to call us back to let us know, because absolutely, I remember the call, and I remember telling you if you figure it out, you know, or you get it working, give us a call back. We don't know why, but at least we do know why that it's operational. And you did basically the same thing that you did last time. You just did it again, and just by doing it worked, which means that something obviously in the first installation was not correct.
Must be.
I mean, Larry, would you go with that?
Yeah, I'd go with that, and I think that just goes to prove that sometimes doing the same thing over and over again doesn't prove that you're crazy.
Yeah.
Sometimes it actually works.
If you at first you don't succeed, try.
That's it.
Now, could I ask,
Charlie? That's great. I'm glad that it's working for you.
Guys, could I ask you a couple questions, Larry?
Sure, absolutely. That's what we're here for.
I want to work on this. I started with, like I say, Ubuntu 9.10, mm-hmm. and when I put Ubuntu on there, when I reinstalled it and I got on the internet, it updated to 10.04.
Okay.
Now, my question, is that the latest one?
Well, 10.04 is not the latest one. The latest one, I think, would be 11.10.
Wow.
11.10.
Yeah, you're way behind.
Yeah.
Okay, now.
Well, not necessarily.
Okay.
If it's working for you, unless there's some reason for upgrading to the latest version, I would just stick with it. The 10 point, you said you've got 10.04?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so 10.04 was the last long-term support release. And what a long-term support release is from Ubuntu is one where they have taken all the interim releases in between, where they've been trying out new ways to do things, trying out new software applications and so on. And at a long-term support release, they lock it down and they make it as stable as they can for that release. And then they release it out. And it's due for another long-term support release coming up very, very shortly in the spring mm-hmm. of next year. Mm-hmm. And when you install a long-term support release, it will offer to upgrade you when the next long-term support release okay. is available. So okay. you'll see it when you do your regular security updates.
Uh-huh.
You'll see it prompt you when the next long-term support release is out. And you can go ahead and click on that upgrade then, and it'll probably change quite a few things about your computer and the way it works if you really okay. want to do that. But definitely get you on the latest version at that time.
So, when I started out with 9.10 and then I went on the internet, it automatically updated it to 10.04.
Yes.
But now with Mint, I started out with Mint 8 and it did not update it. I still have Mint 8.
Right. Well, and each distribution of Linux does things a little bit differently. And so with Mint 8, I'm guessing at this point, since I usually go for the latest and greatest, I'm guessing that Mint doesn't automatically offer to upgrade, although they do offer upgrades, and you can upgrade. Linux Mint, it's coming back to me now, Linux Mint typically prefers you to, rather than upgrade, install from scratch. In other words, download a CD with the latest version and install that and replace your current version rather than upgrade. And that's usually what I recommend for people, unless they're upgrading long-term support releases like you're doing, at which point those upgrades are also part of what they test out for stability. So the fact that it will upgrade very reliably on the long-term support releases means that you can usually upgrade without any trouble at all.
Now, what is the latest version of Mint?
12. Yes.
Okay. And, Larry, I notice that you talk a lot about Mint, that it seems like maybe it's my imagination, but you kind of favor it. Maybe I'm wrong or anything. Is there certain things about Mint that Ubuntu does not have, or am I just imagining anything?
Why don't we pause on that, Charlie, and we'll have Larry answer that question when we come back, because we're up against the break. But you stay on the phone, okay, Charlie?
Sure.
And we will come back and have Larry answer that question. Does he prefer Mint to Ubuntu? And if so, why? We're going to continue on. This is the Computer America Show on the Business Talk Radio Network. Stay with us.
And welcome back to the Computer America Show. I was waiting for the music, but I remember I told you.
You're not looking at the aim. I wrote you what you should do.
I know. Anyways, welcome back to the Computer America Show. It is our Linux show, and I believe we still have the call online for some more questions.
You're supposed to come back with the phone number, Ben.
I completely forgot. 866-606-TALK, 866-606-8255.
Yes, and we are talking to Charlie in Park Ridge, Illinois. Had some questions, and just before the break, we had to interrupt him. So he was asking Larry, why did he prefer Mint to Ubuntu? Am I correct, Charlie, on that question?
You're exactly right.
All right, so...
you were accusing me of favoring Mint, and you're very astute in that in that regard. Yes, I do prefer Linux Mint, and one of the reasons that... Well, let me back up a second. I used Ubuntu for a long time, and I switched to Linux Mint when earlier this year... And later last year, I guess, towards the end of last year, Ubuntu started to switch to a new user interface.
Which you didn't like?
A user interface they call Unity. And that user interface changed the way you interact with your computer so drastically that although I tried it out, I wasn't comfortable with it. And a few things didn't work that I needed to work, like, podcast recording, and so
that's an important one. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So there were a few things that were a little more niggly, but Linux Mint made the adjustment to a similar but different user interface. So Ubuntu went their own route and started using something they developed called Unity, whereas the rest of the Linux world that's using the GNOME interface, or the GNOME desktop, rather, it's probably more an accurate way of saying it, has gone to GNOME 3, which is, it does change the way you interact with your computer a bit. But what Mint has done is they have made some extensions to that user interface that allow you to ease into the new way of doing things. For example, on the bottom panel, the taskbar is what would be called in Windows. Normally on Windows, you see a start button over on the left-hand side. And on Mint, historically, there's been a menu button there that works very much like the start button in Windows. And the GNOME 3 interface took that whole bottom bar away. Well, Mint extensions put it back with that menu that pops up, and you still have all the features that you had before, plus all the features of the new GNOME interface as well. So another nice thing about Mint that sets it apart from Ubuntu is the fact that it just looks nicer on the screen. Not that Ubuntu looks bad. It's just I prefer the cleaner looks of Linux Mint. Now, Linux Mint is actually based on Ubuntu, so you would think that it would look very similar, but actually it's Linux, and you can make it look however you want, and the folks over at Linux Mint have made it look dramatically different from Ubuntu. And they have made it perform a little bit better as well, even with the new GNOME 3 interface in there. They have maintained the performance level. And one of the other things that I really like about Mint in general is that even though it's based on Ubuntu, they include things in the base installation that Ubuntu doesn't. Things that most people would want, for example, the ability to play an MP3 file, an audio file, the ability to record a podcast using MP3. Some things that I am interested in using. Now, it's not to say you can't do that on Ubuntu or any other Linux distribution. It's not. It's just that it's not there out of the box. So there are a number of reasons I've switched to Linux Mint. Those kind of summarize them. And overall, it's just a more pleasant experience. And on the podcast, I've gotten to recommending Mint more, partially because it's the distribution I use. And as a result, it's easier to support something that I use than it is something that I don't. Yeah. But more importantly, I feel that Mint is better for the new Linux user than Ubuntu, the current version of Ubuntu is. The older Ubuntus, they were fine for new Linux users, but I think Mint.
You think Mint? Uh-oh. Did we just lose him? I think we just lost Larry. Are you there?
I think he just fell off his chair.
He did.
I'm still here.
Yeah, I know. I see you. But Larry, I think we just lost Larry.
Just kind of dropped off mid-sentence.
Yeah, mid-sentence. Larry, are you there? If not, we might have to reconnect with you. That's strange. All right. Well, anyway, you got the answer to your question, Charles, that he does prefer Mint, and for the reasons that he stated. So I guess hopefully that answers your question.
Well, I have, but I don't want to be a hog and hog up the whole program. Yeah. I had a couple other questions, but
I'll tell you what. Why don't we save them for next time Larry comes on?
Fine.
Okay,
that's fine with me.
All right, and
or if you're near a computer, an internet connected computer, which I hear that you are, you can come to our chat room, and he's in the chat room too.
Yes, he is. Go to our chat room at from our homepage at computeramerica.com and join our chat and see if we can and he can answer your questions in there as well. Okay.
Okay.
All right, excellent. All right, well, thank you so much, Charles, for calling.
Okay, and you guys are great. I listen to you all the time, and I like going Linux, and I like Computer America. You help a lot of people out. Do a great job.
I will tell Larry that when we get him back on. Thank you so much. Listen, Happy New Year to you, okay?
Yeah, you too, Al.
All right, you take care. Bye-bye. Everything is back to normal. We've got Larry Bushy back with us.
Yes, we do.
Yeah, and I noticed the only two guys in the chat room who are using Linux, Addison and Larry, or both of them got dumped. So I'm wondering what that what is. And by the way, I did find our buddy list winner of the week, Michael Dobek. The file was just under a window.
That.
I know it was under a window. I couldn't find it, but there he is. So that was he's our current buddy list winner of the
little
week.
Little known fact about Linux,
which
all
is
all of them are connected. Every one of them.
That's right. If one goes down, they all go down.
At the same time. That's right.
Exactly. So we were talking to Charles, and I know you ended suddenly, but he had more questions. We told him to join us in the chat room, and if not, to call us next year.
Not that he has to wait a whole year.
No,
because calling back.
No, of course not. Exactly. So we have the last segment to talk a little bit about the topic that you originally wanted to talk about, which is synergy. And tell us about this and what this is all about.
Well, we'll make it quick. Synergy is a cross-platform keyboard and mouse sharing application that works nicely on Linux, and it works nicely on Windows and on Mac as well. And a picture is worth 100,000 words in this case.
That's a lot of words.
If you go to synergy-foss, F-O-S-S, for free open source software, .org, so synergy-foss.org, that's their homepage, and there's a picture right there that explains it all. You see a Linux screen on the left, a Windows screen in the middle, and a Mac screen on the right, and a Mac keyboard and mouse, and the mouse is moving between all three screens.
Wait a minute. It's Synergy, S-Y-N-E-R-G-Y hyphen Foss?
Yes.
F-O-S.
I will put it in the I have put it in the chat and the show notes for everybody.
I see it. Okay.
Yeah. And it's .org on the end, not .com.
Yep.
So and essentially what it does is it allows you from a single keyboard and mouse connected to one of your computers to control any number of computers up to 14. Why 14? I don't know. It's just 14 different computers from a single keyboard and mouse. And so if you move your mouse over to the Linux screen, you can type in a Linux window, move that over to your Mac, you can type in the Mac word processor, you can copy text from the Mac word processor and push it back over to the Linux word processor, so you can copy and paste between the two different machines using the single keyboard and mouse. It's really an excellent program.
Yeah, I'm looking at a picture of it here. You have client one server and client two, no keyboard and mouse. Client one, no keyboard and mouse, and the server has the keyboard and mouse, and it's shared between all three screens. Really,
that's
really sick.
Exactly.
Sick. It's
yeah.
It's slick. Yes, it is. And and it's called Synergy. Now, why did you want to bring this up?
Well, it was actually a suggestion from Steve McLaughlin, one of the listeners to our podcast. He also goes by Door to Door Geek. And he mentioned that there are so many different versions of Synergy out there. Which one should he use? There's Synergy and Q Synergy and Quick Synergy and Synergy Plus and Synergy 2. Well, all of those projects have merged into one, and they're all just called Synergy now. And back in 2010, I interviewed one of the owners of the Synergy project at the time they were merging all this together, and they introduced Synergy 1.4. And Nick Bolton is his name. We can include a link in the show notes to that particular interview as well.
Was he related to Michael Bolton, who sang the song?
Don't know. He is English.
Okay.
But and we've also got for folks interested in how to set up Synergy, we've got an article on the Going Linux website. We'll include that show note, that link in the show notes too, where we discuss Synergy, how it works, how to get it set up on Linux, and a little bit about the various versions that have been there in the past. basically, it started off as a command line application on Linux, Mac, and Windows that allowed you to do this function. You had to set it up from the command line, and most of the various versions that are out there today, have been attempts at building a graphical user interface. And Nick and the other folks at the Synergy Project have put it all together in a single project with a really slick interface that allows you to do the setup graphically without having to know an awful lot about your particular computer or IP addresses or any of that networking stuff that scares so many people. So a very, very interesting project, and just something that works not just with Linux this time, but with Mac and Windows as well.
Yeah, and again, so one keyboard, one mouse can control the three systems simultaneously. Yeah. And
no hardware switches or anything involved, just software.
Yeah, it's that's because they make something called KSRs, which is a hardware solution where you can hook one mouse, one keyboard to three different computers. But with Synergy, you're doing it multiple computers on your desk, and it is through via software.
Yeah.
Now you have to have the computers connected. Somehow, I mean, how do you have them actually connected? So
they have to be connected. Well, if you're at home, on your home network.
So
as long as they're on the same network, it'll work. Whether it's wireless, wired, doesn't matter. Just as long, you couldn't connect through the internet without doing some fancy footwork, I guess. Right. But why would you if you're located somewhere else? You can't see one of the screens.
That makes sense. So here was another question. So which screen is on the left and which is on the right, which is in the middle? Or do you
can arrange them however you like, and whichever computer you want can be the controlling computer.
That's really slick. All right, well, listen, we got a break. We did make it for the first hour. When we come back, we're going to talk about we're going to meet some of the emails that we've gotten with questions about Linux. So we'll be right back after your local and national news. Stay tuned for another full hour on our All Linux Show here on Computer America.
You're listening to Computer America. ComputerAmerica.com.
Hello and welcome into hour two of the nation's longest running, nationally syndicated radio talk show on computers. This is the Computer America Show, and I'm your host, Craig Crossman.
And I'm your co-host, Ben.
And we continue on. It's the third Tuesday of the month. It's all about Linux, everything you want to know about Linux. Here with us is Larry Bushy. He is the creator and host of the Going Linux podcast. And in the first hour, we talked to, I think it was Charles, who had some questions, Charlie in Park Ridge,
that's
Illinois.
Right. Yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we got most of them answered. He asked, if you had a favorite between Mint and Ubuntu, and you explained to them for the most part as to why you prefer Mint. They changed the user interface and a number of things that you tried, and you just felt that you could do more with Mint. One of the things that you couldn't do was your podcast. So one of the reasons. Yeah. So these are all some of the reasons why you prefer and use it at this time. Not to say that you won't go back. Now, in this hour, we're going to go to emails. But before we get to those, I just want to make sure. I know we were talking about Synergy and this really cool application that allows you to run more than one computer using just one keyboard and mouse, and you could have a Linux system, a Windows system, and a Mac system all controlled with one keyboard and mouse using something called Synergy. And I just want to make sure that we had covered everything, because I know we got sidetracked a little bit with Charlie and also with some technical difficulties.
Yeah.
So was there anything else that you wanted to talk about Synergy before we move into the emails?
Well, just to clarify that you don't have to have one of each kind of operating system on your computers. Mm-hmm. I mean, it works just fine if all you have is multiple Windows or multiple Macs or multiple Linux computers. Of course, I'd like to see you with multiple Linux computers, but not everybody has that luxury. And so any number of computers, any mix of all of those operating systems, mm-hmm. up to 14 individual computers.
Wow.
And that's pretty much it. I think we go ahead.
What about the hardware? Does this work with Logitech mice, with Microsoft mice,
as long as the mouse works with one of your computers and the keyboard works with one of your computers, it's fine. Mm-hmm. The keyboard and the mouse have to be connected to one of the computers.
Right.
And in a server client model, the computer that has the keyboard and mouse connected is the server, and everything else is the client. You don't have to know anything about that to set up Synergy, but that's for those technically inclined, that's the way it works. You need to install Synergy on all of the computers you want to connect together this way, and you don't have to worry about which version of Synergy. You know, just download the Synergy. It will install both the server and the client application. They're very small on your computer, and you'll have a nice graphical user interface where you can set things up. And normally on the server, you would it's kind of a set of squares. Think about a tic-tac-toe board, for example. If you had nine squares with the computer that you have your keyboard and mouse connected to in the center square. And you could drag another computer. Let's say the center computer was your Mac and you have a Linux computer. You could drag that Linux computer to the right or to the left of your Mac, or above your Mac or below your Mac, or up, you know, in the upper left corner, upper right corner, lower left, lower right, wherever you want to position it, whatever's representative of where you have the screen at your desk. And so when you drag your mouse in that direction, the mouse will go to that screen. And if you have it to the left, it will drag off the left side of your Mac screen onto your Linux computer, coming from right to left. And so you can set up to nine very easily. How you would arrange 14 computers, I don't know. But could have up to 14.
One on
you
top know, of each other.
I've seen that before.
Yeah, like it's like with, the Jenga.
No, with World of Warcraft, you know, people will do like, you know, three or four accounts on a computer. This guy has like 20 computers set up, and he runs, you know, 43 accounts on his setup.
Wow.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not sure. I've never used it for gaming. I would think that because you're using it over a network connection, there might be a little bit of latency there. So you might be better served from a gaming perspective to use some hardware. But for the average computer user, it works just fine.
Yeah.
And I've been using it for years. Even before I discovered Linux, I was using Synergy on Windows. Well, so
there you go.
Yeah.
You mean you used to use Windows, like? Okay.
Yes, I did. Right. I am a
you heard
Linux
it here.
Convert and a
you heard it here first, folks. Okay.
We all did crazy things when we were young.
Yeah, exactly.
That's it.
Young and reckless.
I'll go with that.
There you go. All right. So we're going to go to email. And again, these are emails that were sent to Larry, all having to do with Linux questions. And they're good ones. He picks them out, and we're going to kind of start addressing these. Let's start off with Paul in Australia.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting because, you know, last night we announced our five winners, and we had two of them were from Alaska, and and one of them was from, listened to us in Glasgow, Scotland. You know, you're not the only one with international listeners. What can I tell you?
There you go.
All right, so Paul in Australia has a let's go with this.
Yeah, so Paul has a tip for those people using Linux and who are using the LibreOffice Office Suite under Linux. He writes to me and my co-host, Tom. He says, "Hi, Tom and Larry," which is kind of the way most of our emails start. Either, "Hi, Tom and Larry," or "Hi, Larry and Tom," or "Hi, guys," or "Hey, you," or, you know, whatever.
Well,
anyway.
One day someone's going to write to you and say, "Hi, Craig and Ben," and I'll throw you off.
Yeah, that'll throw me right off.
Okay.
I'll forward it to you guys.
Thanks.
Okay. So Paul writes, "I came across the following link to assist in performing spell checking for other languages. This helped me as I require the Australian English Dictionary, which is not available by default."
No.
And he gives the link, we'll include it in the show notes, to a LibreOffice site where they discuss the dictionary. And Paul continues, "The, quote, more dictionaries online, unquote, option," and I suspect there he's talking about in the LibreOffice application itself, doesn't work to bring you to the above link. I would appreciate it if you share it with the Linux community. Thanks. Thank you for your help. Regards. We'll share it with the Linux and the Mac and the Windows community, since LibreOffice is available for all of those platforms.
Yep.
And I'm sure that would be very useful for those folks who don't want to use the UK or US English dictionary that comes by default on the LibreOffice.
There's an Australian English dictionary, so you have things like No Worries and Wallaby Gone and all those are in there. Right.
Every I was going to say something stupid. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, the Australian English dictionary knows how to spell the word Vegemite.
Ah, okay.
That's what it is.
Okay. There you go. All right.
So thanks to Paul for sharing that information.
All right. Now let's go to Aldo. He's having some trouble with Ubuntu 11.10.
He is. He said, and we actually read one of his emails on the podcast before. So he says, it's funny to hear you reading my email on the radio. Next time I will send an audio file with my name. I remember you were pronouncing it Aldo. I was pronouncing it Aldo. We agreed to disagree. He says, you are right about Ubuntu 11.10. I guess the user has to install a few packages to enable GNOME Classic. What do you think about GNOME Shell, by the way?
I was filling up my car the other day at a GNOME Shell. But that's another story. When we come back, we'll continue on with this email from Aldo, or however you want to pronounce it. This is the Computer America Show on the Business Talk Radio Network. It's all about Linux. 866-606-TALK, the toll-free number. If you have a question, we will be right back. Stay with us. Twenty-two minutes after the hour here on the Computer America Show, 866-606-TALK, the toll-free number, live at ComputerAmerica.com. Our email address, of course, our chat room at ComputerAmerica.com. We're in hour two of our All Linux show. Larry Bushy continues on with us, and we're reading emails. This one from Aldo, and we just started reading it. He's having trouble with Ubuntu 11.1, and why don't you continue?
Okay, so he asked me what I thought of GNOME Shell. He continues, I tried to use GNOME Shell at home, but the appropriate ATI driver doesn't allow it to work. Mm-hmm. The open source driver is okay, but it ruins performance of the GPU-intensive applications such as games. So I prefer Unity for now. Mm-hmm. Another thing it's worth mentioning is that the codecs may be added during installation. He's talking about what we were talking about when Charlie was on the line, where some of those codecs that allow you to play MP3 files or record in MP3 format are installed by default with Mint, but not with Ubuntu. And he's saying it's very easy to add them during installation, which is true. He says there's a checkbox where you install when you install Ubuntu that fixes this problem quickly if you have a network available. Thanks. And Aldo, thanks for the email. He was mainly commenting about what we've already discussed, really, the Ubuntu 11.10 Unity interface. And what do I think about GNOME Shell, which is the GNOME 3 remake of the user interface? I like it better. One of the things that I've noticed with the Ubuntu Unity interface is they have a series of icons down the left-hand side that's meant to be kind of like a dock in Mac, except that when you go anywhere near that left-hand side of your screen, it pops out. I heard it described as pops out like a Jack Russell Terrier. and it does it at the most annoying times. In GNOME 3, they have a similar sort of dock that is where you can store your favorite icons and favorite links, but it's better implemented, I think. Instead of whenever you reach that left-hand side of your screen, It jumps out only if you hit the upper left corner of your screen, which is something that's not difficult to touch with your mouse, but it takes a little more effort than just moving to the left.
They have that feature on the Mac too. I mean, you can put the dock in the bottom or on the left or the right hand side, but that you can also make it so it's invisible unless you go to the edge of the screen. And
right.
I don't like that. I have it on the bottom and I have it showing at all times because, you're right. You know, you go down there for something and then it pops up. I'd rather know where my limitation is and just have it there. Although the Mac also gives you an option of doing what's known as a genie effect. When you scroll over them, they get larger, you know, so they're easier to click on. So, but yeah, I can understand that.
Right. And I've seen that, and I've seen some remakes of Linux operating systems with docks like that that do emulate some of the same sort of features. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, but I agree with Aldo, and I think with many users of Ubuntu that have switched from it, that that kind of feature is not so much a feature as it is an annoyance. So I think we're in agreement here, Aldo.
Okay, there you go.
Yeah.
All right. It's nice to agree with the
exactly. So shall we go on to Fred in Kansas?
Yeah, let's go someplace less exotic, and Kansas sounds like it. So he's writing that his Linux goes poof. What's up with that?
And I don't know, maybe Kansas is exotic to somebody from Netherlands or something.
It could be.
So Fred says, "Hello, Larry and Tom. I have enjoyed and learned much from your show over the years. Thank you." Thank you both for your volunteered time. I do consider myself to be a paid subscriber. Mm-hmm. And perhaps he's clicked the donate button on our website. He says, can you help, please? I have a standalone Dell 7. Standalone Dell, 7 years old, mm-hmm. dual boot with XP and running PC Linux OS 2011. With an LXDE desktop. LXDE is yet another mm-hmm. window manager or desktop. All is good except when the PC Linux OS is sitting idle for, say, 20 minutes, the software just blows away.
Okay.
I'm left with a black screen with the PC fan and the box still on. To get back live, I need to push the power button and reboot from scratch.
That is one crazy screensaver.
Yes, it is. The only way to get out of that screensaver is to restart your computer.
Yeah.
He says, note, this does not happen with the XP side of the dual boot. XP can idle for hours and hours.
Oh.
Hmm. Mm-hmm. It's sitting there idling for hours and hours. I wonder. I'm not even going to go there. I have visited all the forums and searched with no good hits. Could it be a conflict with my BIOS and Linux version? Mm. So it could be more likely something with your video card. It could be that the driver. For the video card that you have in your computer is not compatible with Linux, or that the Linux version isn't quite right. As we know with Linux, software and hardware manufacturers don't come running to Linux as the first operating system that they want to support. And so oftentimes the Linux community has to write its own drivers for things like video cards or wireless cards and things like that. Mm-hmm. This being a 7-year-old Dell, I would think that the drivers would be quite functional. It's possible that it could be a hardware problem with the hard drive. Maybe the installation isn't right. Without seeing the computer or having more details, it's really, really hard to tell what's going on here. Maybe it's the screensaver.
All right. Well, your guess is as good as mine. Hopefully that gives them some direction to try. We've got to take another break. And then we'll continue on. We're going to talk about, of course, our Facebook contest is coming up again, Ben, tomorrow night. We'll talk about that. This is the Computer America Show on the Business Talk Radio Network. Stay with us. We are talking to Larry Bushy, who is the with the Going Linux podcast. He actually he is the creator and host of the Going Linux podcast, and we're right now we're on our All Linux show, and we're doing emails, and we just finished the one from Fred in Kansas, and let's go to the one Martin in Munich. We're back to exotic places again, Munich, Germany.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, Martin in Munich. I'm going for the alliteration there. He shares how he has gone Linux. Hi, Larry and Tom. Thanks for your informative and very enjoyable show. I listen to it regularly and love your approach to Linux, as well as the fun and challenges it provides. I've been using Linux, more specifically Ubuntu, since 2005 as my sole operating system and am very happy with it. I run Ubuntu 10.04 long-term support on my Lenovo ThinkPad notebook. I also have a tiny little server, as opposed to a tiny big server, I guess, a flashed slug, which is a Linksys NSLU2 network-attached storage device, running Debian 5 Lenny, which is a distribution of Linux, and have just started messing around with virtual machines in VirtualBox. I don't work in IT, but enjoy playing with it in my spare time. Please keep going and keep the episodes coming. Happy holidays and Happy New Year. Best wishes, Martin in Munich, Germany.
There you go.
Yeah, so have you guys heard of this slug, the Linksys NSLU2?
Now, the only NAS device, the one that I was, is the one from Netgear.
Yeah.
The Linksys, I'm not familiar, and it's interesting because we just had Linksys on the show this past week, so, but no, it didn't come up in the conversation. Tell us about it.
Well, I don't think it would. It's a few years old now, but Linksys did make this specific network-attached storage device so that it could be the ROM on it could be flashed so that you could install Linux on it. As you may be aware, most of these network-attached storage devices either run Linux or have some sort of Linux as part of their operating system to allow it to be a network-attached storage on the network. But this particular device was specifically designed by Linksys so that you could take it and make it into essentially a little Linux computer without a monitor and keyboard that you connect to over the network. And so it looks like Martin has done just that. He's put Debian Linux on there, and he's using it over his network.
Well, there you go, and doing it so successfully.
Apparently so.
Exactly. All right. Well, it's interesting because you get these different feedbacks of people who are just you know, trying something and using it and reporting back, and that's nice because if you're thinking about trying something, you know at least, hey, here's somebody else who did it and it works, you know. So
yeah, and you know, a lot of the Linux community is made up of tinkerers.
I've noticed that because and I think it just goes with the territory because it's open, and I mean, it's sort of like It's like the Android phones. You know, people who like to tinker will inevitably, instead of having the iPhone or the iOS, which is completely sealed and, you know, closed, they use the Android because they like to tinker with it. They go in there, they can modify it, they can change little things in there. It has more settings that you can play with. I think it's that mindset. If you're the kind of person who just wants to go and get their job done and don't want to have to worry about it, you know, Linux still might be for you, but, you know, then also, you know, you might want to go to a Mac or Windows as well. So it all depends.
Right. If you're the kind of person who just wants it to work, you know, an iPhone would be fine for you. If you're the kind of person who just wants it to work, then you just want to get in there and toy with it until it breaks and then get back in there and make it work again, then Android or Linux is for you.
There you go. That's it. Yeah, let me break it. Let me see if I can fix it. Yeah, that's exactly
it. That's the attitude right there.
All right. Well, keeping on with our European flavor, we're going back to Australia again. Okay,
yeah,
Paul in Australia.
I'm not sure Australia is in Europe, but this is the same Paul.
Yeah, right. It's overseas. Oh, we're back. And it's the same guy. Okay.
It is the same guy.
All right.
He's having trouble installing Linux in this case. Yeah. He says, hi, Tom and Larry. How are you? I would just like to share my recent issue at installing Linux Mint 12 on an old PC. The motherboard is Asus A7 V8X, which doesn't mean anything to me, but you know, he actually provided me a link to the specs for that motherboard. He continues, I had two hard drives in there at 200 gigabytes IDE drive and a 1 terabyte SATA drive. Mm-hmm. When running the setup from the live CD, the IDE hard drive was detected and available to install the operating system on, though in relation to the SATA drive, I was only given the selection to install the bootloader on the SATA drive, though was not given the option to choose the SATA drive as the installation drive. I then downloaded WattOS, another Linux distribution, which performed the installation did the same thing, i.e. not give me the option of my SATA drive to install the OS on. I had much better luck with CentOS version 6.0. The installation DVD was able to detect my SATA drive straight away. I have since partitioned the drive and installed the operating system on the main computer. Just thought I'd share the experience. Thanks for your show. Regards, Paul. A little bit puzzling at first as to why some Linux distributions wouldn't detect that SATA drive. And then I did a little bit of researching. And remembering back to myself trying to install Linux on a computer that had two hard drives that were made into a RAID drive. It made it look like a single drive. And what I found after doing some research is that, and having some discussion with Paul via email, we think that the SATA drive that Linux, some of these Linux distributions couldn't detect, was in fact a RAID drive. And if the computer manufacturer has used software RAID rather than hardware RAID, the Linux community likes to call software RAID fake RAID, then most of the Linux distributions out there won't even allow you to install on it until you remove the RAID, until you split it up into its individual drives. And it has to do with the way that software RAID was written. There's a lot of technical details behind it. But bottom line is most Linux distributions won't work, which begs the question, why did CentOS work?
Yeah.
Well, CentOS is essentially Red Hat Linux without the branding. So all the Red Hat branding is stripped out of it, and it is Red Hat Linux. Now, Red Hat Linux is designed for servers, and it is one of the most popular versions of Linux in business to power servers that companies may use, and it's also used in many places for internet servers as well. And since CentOS is based on Red Hat, it has all of the code that's behind Red Hat. And Red Hat, being a server distribution, my suspicion is that it may have some extensions to the operating system that allow it to recognize this software RAID on a drive, and that may be why it
worked.
Why it has worked? Yeah. So some of that is supposition, educated guesses on my part, and some of that is from bitter experience. But I think I'm pretty close, if not bang on, with that assessment of what's going on.
And regardless of the accuracy, we're going to put on Wikipedia, and it's going to go.
Okay. All right. When we come back, we've got one more email. That's George's experience illustrates while installing any OS can be scary. This is the Computer America Show. Larry Bushy continues on with us. We will be right back after this. So let's finish with this last email, Larry. This is from George, and his experience illustrates why installing any operating system can be, as you put it, scary.
Yeah, so this is a pretty long email, and I think we can fit it in, okay. So let's go for it. Hello, Tom and Larry, big fan of the show. Keep up the good work. I wanted to email you in regards to a show you had done a while back about installing Linux versus the other operating system, yeah. That being Windows. Yeah. Please forgive me if it was a really old episode. I just listened to them all recently.
Wow.
That's 156 yeah, that's a lot. Episodes. Yeah. During that, it was described that Linux basically was a cakewalk to install and Windows could take hours. I figure I had to describe my recent install of Linux Mint onto my machine to bring the thing back down to reality. Don't get me wrong, I love Linux, which is why I spent this long trying to get things right, but I feel it's a stumbling block. It's stumbling blocks like this that will keep Linux out of the hands of the masses. I recently upgraded my machine. I got an i5 2500K processor, an Asus P8H67-M Pro motherboard with 16 gigs of RAM. Mm-hmm. I did a little research to see that this thing should run Linux, and the rest of the parts I already knew would work on Linux. But this motherboard had EFI boot. So I knew older Linux distributions weren't going to work. So after putting the machine together, I decided to install Linux Mint 12. The install seemed to go flawlessly, but almost immediately the cracks formed. Oh. Mint installer application was taking forever to install applications. Programs were opening very slowly. Once they were open, they ran well until another program tried to do something, and then it would come to a screeching halt. And when I ran VirtualBox, more than one virtual machine would kill the system. So I tried going back to Ubuntu. Worked better, but again, not perfect. So I decided to try a non-Ubuntu-based distribution to see if that was the problem. Fedora wouldn't even install. It came up with a hardware conflict on boot between my video card and something called Nouveau. Right. I tried doing some research on it, asked some people. Basically, I found people that were having my problems, but no solutions. Some people said it might be because my hardware is too new, which may be the case. Long story short, after 8 hours of looking, installing, and testing, here's what I had to do to get Linux running right. Another tinkerer here.
Yeah.
I ended up back at Linux Mint 12, found that the Mint installer didn't work, so I installed Ubuntu Software Center and Synaptic Package Manager. The GNOME 3 interface appears to be broken from my machine, so I installed KDE and a couple of other tweaks. And now the system seems to be 98% good to go.
Yeah.
Well, it sounds like a bit of a Frankenstein.
Yeah, it does.
But hey, what the heck. But my take on this is that this type of install would definitely scare a newbie away, you think?
Yeah.
While I got my system working, I'm still uncertain as to what caused this. Is it the EFI boot? Is it the hardware, or is it the software glitch caused by my hardware?
Maybe it's just him.
There's something in common amongst all this.
Yes.
Him. While my search helped me to troubleshoot, most of the answers were pretty much passing the buck. Fedora won't install because of this error. Install another version of Linux. Linux Mint installer doesn't work. Just rip it out and install something else. But I never found a clear answer, like GNOME 3 doesn't work well with NVIDIA cards or EFI boot or something like that. Mm-hmm. It was more or less sifting through posts to find that this person says GNOME 3 doesn't work well for them, and then you find out they have an EFI system. So you have to go, maybe I should try the same thing. don't get me wrong, I love my Linux since I converted last year, but I find that sometimes Linux is shown in a perfect light, while in reality it has its own set of problems that can be a complex nightmare. And it certainly sounds like he had a bit of a complex nightmare with his installation.
His experience is not stereotypical of most Linux.
No, it's not at all. And I suspect that he's quite right that his hardware is too new. Maybe there's a driver that hasn't been fully developed yet. The KDE desktop may have worked a little bit better in that case, and he seemed to have a little bit of success there, which kind of leads me to believe that there may be a video driver thing going on. This EFI boot thing that he mentions, I've put a link in the show notes to a Wikipedia article on EFI, extensible firmware interface, that might be interesting to read when you've got some time.
All right, Larry. Well, obviously we're out of time, and it was a pleasure having you on the show. Listen, happy holidays and happy New Year to you. And
see you next year.
We will see you next year on the 17th of January. And
Sounds great. And
we'll see you then. And again, thank you so much for being with us here tonight, Larry.
My pleasure. Thanks.
Take care. Bye bye. All right, there he goes.
Music provided by Mark Blasco at podcastthemes.com.